Hey everyone, Bryce from 10X Travel here with something important. We rarely interrupt the podcast with ads, which should signal just how crucial this message is for your points and miles future. There's legislation currently in Congress, the Credit Card Competition Act, that poses a serious threat to both your credit card rewards and security. That's why 10X Travel has partnered with the Points Guy for this sponsored message with two goals. First, to inform as many people as possible about what's happening. And second, to show you how you can take action to help us defeat this bill. Here's what you need to know. The legislation would force credit card companies to give merchants an alternative way to process transactions without the standard fees. The problem? Those interchange fees fund crucial and critical benefits that we all rely on, like fraud protection and the travel rewards that we love. Big retailers like Walmart and Target are pushing for this bill because it's cheaper, less structured networks would save them millions. Meanwhile, they're not concerned that it could compromise your payment security and potentially dismantle the points and miles system as we know it. But there's good news. You can help protect your points and safeguard your payment information. Take a moment right now to pause this episode and visit go.10xtravel.com/protect-your-points, which you'll find linked in the show notes. The site has a simple form that will automatically send a message to your representative urging them to vote against this legislation. With your support, we can stop this bill and continue enjoying nearly free travel experiences. Hello and welcome to Take Off, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm your host, Bryce. Today I am joined by Emily and Travis. How are we doing today, Emily and Travis?
We're good.
I'm doing great. I just had a realization. Our audience is going to learn that sometimes we record more than one episode a day.
Shh.
Now, I didn't change my shirt to try to hide this fact, but I realized that that's not actually the giveaway. The giveaway is that in the episode that we just finished recording, I talked about how I'm not going to be here for the next few because I'm going on a trip, and yet here I am for the very next episode. So if you're recalling to the episode that released 2 weeks ago, just know that that recording was about 20 minutes ago, and now we're here doing our next one. So the cat's out of the bag that we batch these, and so if any of us are wearing anything different, call us out because it was our attempt to cover it.
Hey,
up.
I mean, come on now.
You just gave
I
us
was
cover.
Told that that's just what you do.
Yeah, Steve Jobs used to do that, right? Like same thing every day.
Oh yeah, he changed from one black turtleneck to the other mid podcast recording.
Yeah,
I'll see it. I'll believe it when I see it.
In fairness, I do own like six of these sweatshirts, so it might be a different day. Who knows?
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. Maybe I'm secretly in Antarctica, and this is just a green screen background.
Well, if you're on the Drake Passage, as you mentioned in the last episode, you know, 2 weeks ago, and also 10 minutes ago, you have great camera stabilization because it looks nice and still here on YouTube, whereas it would not if you were actually crossing Drake Passage. Anyways, on today's show, we're going to talk about the three different types of credit card points, which one you should prioritize, pros and cons of each. This is a little bit more high level. Some of our more recent episodes have been deeper dives into specific programs showing redemption options and like screenshots of actual flights. But this one's a little bit more high level. So if you are relatively new to Points and Miles, you're going to be able to follow along with all this. In fact, this will be very helpful for you. But if you want to start with a quick refresher on just the basics of points and miles, I would encourage you go back and listen to episodes 1 through 6 of this show. That's where we outline all of the basics and fundamentals of the hobby. And I guess after today's episodes, you might have to say like, go back, listen to 1 through 6, and then also episode 47 randomly. Like, you know, we're kind of layering into that foundational type stuff, but that's going to give you a high level overview of how all of this works so that you can apply it to your own situation. And if you have any lingering questions or just want to chat about the fact that we're all wearing the same outfit again, you can do so in our Facebook group. Yeah, Emily changed. Well done. Yeah. just share any feedback on our outfit. Actually, not any feedback. Actually, don't talk about our outfits, but come and talk, though, to other people in the Facebook group, which is now over 380,000 members strong. It's the largest Facebook group in the world that covers points and miles. In today's episode, we're starting off talking about outfits, but then we're going to talk about breaking down the three main types of credit card points and answering one of the most common questions in our Facebook group, which is which type of these points should I prioritize? In particular, we're going to go over the strengths and weaknesses of each type, how to determine which ones best align with you and your travel goals, or I guess goals more broadly, some real world examples for each category, and our own personal strategies for earning and using each of these types of points. So to kick things off, let's define them. Let's talk about those three main types of credit card points. There are more of them than there are types of outfits on this podcast in the last two episodes. those three types are, first one is bank transferable points. These are often called flexible points or bank points. These are points that are associated with a bank that has the bank's name in them and usually a few extra words, you know, bank A, you know, loyalty program or something like that. I'm trying real hard here. That's the top layer one.
We'll call it the Bryce Bank bonus.
We're gonna have to go to ChatGPT.
Currency.
Yeah. Bank of Bryce loyalty program.
Forgive me, I have not been on a few of these, but have we ever like addressed the fact that we can't say the names? Like, does this give us like a chance to just be like, we can't really name them?
I think you just gave us that chance. Let's do it. Like, yeah. Why not? Right? So, I guess there's probably a fair amount of you sitting out there that are like, why are they talking so cryptically? And you see this sometimes too, like in our email marketing messages and stuff. It's like, this popular bank program is, as kind of a member of the affiliate programs of these major banks, there are some rules about kind of what we can say, where we can say it from like a bank branding standpoint. Let me be very clear. This isn't like a top secret, like you can't say anything critical about us or anything like that. It's not that. It's brand terms, it's specific product names. There's some kind of, I guess, anxiety would be maybe a word to say it around mentioning specific products, because as this podcast sits out on the internet forever and you find it a year from now and we're talking about some product that doesn't even exist anymore, there's some kind of risk to the bank about that information not being, having a disclaimer like, hey, this is not accurate anymore. And of course, it's hard to go back and edit audio, and I don't want to sit in some audio room and like re-record over things. And you actually hear our voices change more frequently than our outfits. But that is the concern that we have to go about. So we do have to talk kind of somewhat generally about these things. That's why that is. You'll see that across pretty much everyone else in the space. You know, many have actually given up on podcasting for that reason. But we're still kind of chugging along, doing as best we can with that regard, and trying to kind of fill in those gaps, address them without putting the banks at risk, putting us at risk, violating rules, and really upsetting anyone. So that's why we have to say Bank of Bryce's loyalty currency gold program instead of specific ones. But if you've been around
points, I was literally trying to not pick a word that is in any of the major bank.
Yeah, good luck.
Programs. Yeah.
Yeah, they do like to come up with interesting names, but yeah. But anyway, that's the first type of points. It's bank transferable points. I guess we could just go through the whole episode and say it and just do like the Jerry Springer beep out, you know, and then you'd have like some fun situations. But we're going to avoid that for now and call them bank transferable points. So that's the first type. Second one, co-branded airline or hotel points. This is maybe the most common ones that many people are aware of. This is like American Airlines points, Hyatt points. If it has the name of an airline or hotel in it, that's one of these airline or hotel programs. Last but not least, but actually when we get to it, maybe least, I'll make that case later, cashback or fixed value points. These are generally types of points that you can redeem for statement credits, actual cash back, gift cards, etc. Often not tied to travel use, often have very straightforward, predictable values, simple, easy to use, generally lower value. Each type does have its own advantages and limitations. So knowing which one to focus on, you know, is going to vary per person. There's going to be some directional stuff to know. But you know, think about these different types of points, like different tools in a toolbox. You know, some of them are multi-purpose, can do many different things, Swiss Army knife type things. Some are very specialized and do one thing really, really well. And some are just kind of simple and reliable. So let's break that down. So first, I'll toss it over to Emily here first to give us a high-level overview of unnamed, generic, non-branded bank transferable point program.
Perfect. So without naming any of them, the general way that these work is that you can transfer them to multiple airline and hotel partners. And a lot of times the banks will also have bank portals where you can redeem your points at a fixed value, usually somewhere from 1 to 1.5 cents per point. So if you listen to our last episode about Virgin Atlantic, an example of like all the different types of points that you can transfer to get Virgin Atlantic points. There's a lot more potential for outsized value with flexible or transferable points, as we call them, because they're not limited to just one fixed value as long as you transfer your points out. You can get as much or as little value out of them as you want, but you can book business class flights, which makes them infinitely more valuable. You can book luxury hotels, which gets you more value out of them than using them through a portal. You can redeem them for statement credits or cash back. Please don't do this. This is generally like the lowest value you're going to get outside of maybe gift cards. But you can. That's why they're called flexible points, because you can use them in a bunch of different ways. The last thing I'll say about them is that banks frequently offer transfer bonuses. So they can be anywhere from 20% to 50%, sometimes even more, where you're essentially maybe doubling the number of points that you get on the hotel or airline partner that you're transferring to on that end of things. So we mentioned a lot in our Virgin Atlantic episode where just because, you know, you have to pay 6,000 point Virgin Atlantic points, you can't just transfer 4,500 bank points because there's a transfer bonus. So it's a great way to save money even further, or save points even further when these are actively happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the ways that I thought of when we were putting together this episode to think about flexible points is you'll often hear us talk about it's like a more diverse option, right? If you can transfer them to a number of airlines, a number of hotels, and that gives you more power, right? It means that you can deploy your points where you need them, when you need them, instead of having to have the right points at that moment. To maybe help put it into perspective, I literally counted the unique number of airlines and hotels across the five main transferable points currencies. And if you hold all five of those currencies, you have access to 27 different airline partners and 7 different hotel partners. I mean, that shows the size of the value. You can take 5 and have the ability to have points in 34 different programs at any time. A number of those are instantaneous. Not all of them are instantaneous transfers, and that causes some headaches. But that's the power. When people tell me that they want, you know, oh, well, I really like this airline, so I want their points. There's like, that's fine, but in terms of prioritizing, and maybe I'm getting a little too far ahead of which one I personally prefer.
It's this one. It's this one.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's this one. Yeah. No one's going to argue with it being this one, like with some general exceptions. Like, as a general rule, flexible points are always better, because if you think of it, instead of I've got like this one points currency, and instead think of it as I technically have the potential for any of these 18 that partner with this bank, that's really where that value comes from. And that's why we harp on it so much, as being so much more valuable. There's times when it makes sense to have specific airline or hotel programs. There's some airline and hotel programs that I would advocate make more sense to earn from their cards than transferring to them. These are exceptions to the rule. The general rule is you're going to get more value from your flexible points than you're going to get from a single isolated airline or hotel programs points.
Yeah, to the earlier toolbox analogy, these are the Swiss Army knives. They don't all have the same combination of tools that are included in each Swiss Army knife. Like, they'll have a little bit of variation to them, but they overlap a lot. And of course, kind of the common thread through all of this is you don't have to choose just one of these. You can kind of mix and match, hop from one to the other. You don't have to pick one bank transfer program. But when you're looking at like, hey, what's the most versatile tool I can grab? I have options of a Swiss Army knife, a screwdriver, and a hammer. And by the way, the Swiss Army knife has a screwdriver and a hammer on it. Actually, it'd be cool if it had a hammer on it. But it has these things. It's like, it can do that. Yeah. So these are five main programs. Really, there's a couple of kind of, what do you call, fringe or more ancillary programs too. Mm-hmm. They, between all of them, they touch pretty much every airline, except for American Airlines kind of being the big exception at the moment. And we'll probably get into that a little bit later. But they can do all the things because they have so many different options. And if you have a credit card that has a bank's name on it, but not a hotel or airline's name on it, and doesn't earn cash back, it's probably participating in one of these programs, and
I like to just think about it in the sense that you want to have as diverse of a points portfolio as you can, so that say you get an award alert, which we offer on our website. You can sign up at 10xtravel.com/award alerts. There's lots of other people who do this as well. Maybe you get an award alert that says there's a deal on a Virgin Atlantic flight. That's the only airline I can think of now because we just recorded the episode
20 minutes ago.
Right. But you want to have a diverse portfolio so that you can actually book that award alert. If you're just only earning Virgin Atlantic points and you get an award alert that says there's a flight deal on something through Flying Blue, you're kind of screwed. So just think about it from that perspective of like, the more diverse portfolio you have, the more you can book.
I mean, I think this is something we all feel very strongly about and could talk about for days. And I say that, and then I'm going to talk about it more. But like, layering on Bryce's example, one of the common objections we get is, well, I know how to use these, or like, this works really well for my one specific instance. That's fine. Like, again, like, these are all exceptions. But using Bryce's example, you're trying to pick a tool to solve a job, but you don't know what that job is. So if you're given the choice between a hammer and a Swiss Army knife, and you don't know, are you trying to cut something? Are you trying to screw something in? Are there going to be nails? You don't know what you're actually trying to accomplish. In general, the better option is the Swiss Army knife, because it's going to give you more chances to succeed than the hammer. If you know you've got nails, there's times when using the hammer is the right choice and is the right option. And so if you have the context and know that, that's great. Use the hammer. But in a vacuum without any other context, those transferable points are your Swiss Army knife that's going to solve more problems for you.
Yes.
Maybe problems isn't the right word, but...
Give you more opportunities, I suppose, or ways to solve the problem, if you will. There are a couple drawbacks to these flexible bank point programs, and I feel like the first one here is really the biggest one, and the reason why most people don't even think of these, and that is learning curve. These points programs require a bit of an understanding of kind of just the many different ways that can be redeemed. You can transfer airlines and hotels. You can book through Travel Portal. A lot of times you can take cash back. You can get gift cards. You can cash them all out and get your chance at a lottery ticket for a flight to Mars on Virgin. It gets pretty complex. Which
actually isn't available anymore.
Oh, no. So. Boom, we have to strike that.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll come back by the time the episode airs. Yeah. But I think most people overlook these because they go to that immediate brand association of like, I often fly Delta, therefore I should get a credit card that says that name on it. And they don't even realize that in a lot of these situations, if you really dive into the nuance, the best card for one particular airline is often not even that airline's card. Like, you could earn more for all the same spend and same situation by putting it on one of these cards that earns transferable points that transfers to the airline that you like. But something about that just misses a lot of folks, and they just love that brand association. And of course, the cards that participate in these programs don't come with a lot of the perks like priority boarding, free check bags, status earning, et cetera, because they aren't tied to an airline. It's kind of what you trade off for flexibility. And then the second part is limited portal value. Some of the points are worth less when redeemed via the bank's travel portal to book travel through it. That's often a less strategic way to redeem them, but not one that you should skip over entirely. That will frustrate people at times, especially when that price through the portal is higher than it would be if you booked directly with a particular airline's points. But those situations are pretty rare in my experience. And usually it's just as simple as if you understand how these programs work, you quickly realize the value. But if you don't, then you go with old tried and true, which airline do you like to fly the most? You should get their card thinking.
Yeah, I think these two are just kind of tied together, these two drawbacks, because so much of the bank marketing around their cards is that their points are worth exactly this amount when you redeem them through the portal. They're not, going to tell you that you can transfer them and get more value out of them. So a lot of people think that's how I use my points. I use them through the portal. They're worth the same amount every time. And so that's where this learning curve comes in, because your everyday person doesn't even know that option exists. And then you look at the transfer partner cheat sheet on our website and you get overwhelmed because you're like, wow, there's 27 airlines I could book. And then you start to spiral, and we're here to help.
We are here to help. Yeah. So option number two, or type of points number two, rather, would be your airline and hotel specific points. These are the ones that I'd say most people are familiar with. It's what you earn if you are doing paid travel, paid flights, paid hotels. A lot of people have small amounts of these in many different programs from the occasional trips that you have. And again, they're familiar brands. They're attached to an airline or hotel. The naming convention is pretty straightforward. Really using them is pretty straightforward because you only have, you know, one or two places to look instead of exploring all your many options. And you generally are going to be able to redeem them for free travel with that particular brand, airline or hotel, or their partners. So that level of simplicity is often very appealing to people. The cards that earn these types of points tend to come with perks that are associated with the airline or hotel they're tied to. So this is your room upgrades, your status status accelerators, your free check bags kind of thing. These are, I often describe these as kind of like a trap for the reasons that we just mentioned. People kind of get into that, like, I'm a this type of person, I earn these types of points, I carry this card as well, and they don't realize kind of what they're missing out. But
it doesn't mean that, like, these are bad cards to be going for or the wrong points to pursue. Again, if you've listened to every episode up until this point, you're probably yelling at me about talking about like an airline program that I'm a big fan of is United and how to earn their points. It doesn't mean that there's not value here. Like, we're just talking in terms of general tiers of value, like which one should you prioritize, and just like understanding how they fit in with one another. There's some hotel points that I would never transfer my flexible points to. Marriott is a good example. Without a solid transfer bonus in general, I honestly don't know when I've ever, I'm sure I have, transferred flexible points to Marriott. And actually, I know an example. This is a big throwback. I transferred SPG points to Marriott back in the day.
I was.
We can say that one because they're not around anymore.
We can.
Yeah,
we can. which SPG was a weird one. It was a hotel program, but transferred to a number of things.
It was the best. Yeah. Shout out to everyone who knows what we're talking about. SPG. That means you're an OG in points and miles. You've been doing this for a while. And their cards were purple. An underutilized color in the bank branding world.
Yeah.
They were nice. Like, Marriott's one of those where if you ask me how I earn Marriott points, I prefer earning them through co-branded cards because their points values, and virtually everyone that transfers to Marriott transfers one-to-one. So you've got a high points cost, a low transfer ratio. I just don't want to sacrifice that many points to transfer to Marriott. So it doesn't mean that there aren't programs where it makes sense to earn through co-branded airline and hotel cards. There definitely are ones where they are, but in general, like, if I'm choosing between earning Marriott points or a bank's points, oh man, I had to think about that one. If this is the conflict and I'm having to choose which one I'm gonna go for without any additional information, I'm always going to choose the bank's points because there's more flexibility there, even if that flexibility means I end up transferring them to Marriott in the future. Who knows?
Yeah, a kind of like audio visual example that I give to folks who I'm kind of explaining this to who are new to points and miles is I often say, like, if you picture like airline and hotel cards, like actually like physically in front of you, transferable points and the cards that earn them are almost like you take like 10 or 12 of these bank hotel cards and you just like smash them together into one card that has all 10 to 12 brands on it. It's like, this earns points with all of these brands and I get to pick which one. That I find to be like an unlock to the typical situation of someone is like, I carry a card that gives me American Airlines points. I love American Airlines. Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, yeah, that's one slice of all these many you can earn. You're not giving that up. You're just adding the ability to have other types of points and miles that you can earn.
Yeah. Cool. I thought of a fun new analogy for you.
Ooh, Bryce. I love nothing like more.
Flexible points are like a buffet. They give you all of the options.
Yes, exactly that. It's a, I mean, I'm going to use that. I will credit you every time.
What is a hotel point?
That depends on the hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll have to give that more thought. Yeah. It's a buffet.
Yeah, I, 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 I didn't really have much further thought beyond it's like a buffet, so you can get whatever you want. And like, I also feel like buffet generally outside of Vegas has a low quality connotation. So maybe this isn't the best example. It's a Vegas buffet. Flexible points are a Vegas buffet. And in general, hotel and airline points are an Applebee's.
Okay, you're going to have to talk to me about this Vegas buffet situation. I've never had one of those.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, what is new bucket list?
What is so special?
When I'm redeeming all of my points to fly Virgin Atlantic back and forth as many times as possible, you just have to set up at a Vegas buffet until I'm done with my flights.
Okay. Just picture good to know.
A room the size of an airport terminal that has every kind of food you've ever encountered in your entire life, and you can eat as much of it as you want for about $70 to $100. It's like decent quality,
above average quality.
Yeah, we're not talking like like Ryan Steakhouse like type buffet. This is like
this isn't the Golden Corral, which shout out Golden Corral.
I think they just went out of business, right?
Ryan's did.
Oh, Ryan's did.
Golden Corral, I'm sure, is still open.
Yeah, COVID kind of wiped out buffets both culturally and like specifically. It's like, it feels different now.
Yeah.
But anyway, a little trip through the buffet, if you will.
Detour.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that you can't, the point is, it doesn't mean you can't find value. In fact, the value that we talk about from flexible points comes from transferring them to airlines and hotels. That's where you can get this outsized value. But, you know, let's say you're wanting to go to Tokyo. Japan, very popular destination right now. You know, you might have heard me say it 2 weeks ago, but I said it about 2 hours ago. I'm full disclaimer, making some numbers up here on the spot. But if you're looking at hotels, like top tier hotels might be like the Park Hyatt and the Ritz-Carlton. I'm presuming there's a Ritz-Carlton in Tokyo.
There's everything.
Those two hotels. It's the largest metropolitan area in the world. I hope that there's a Ritz-Carlton there. Those two hotels, generally, like when they both exist in the same city, are going to cost the same cash price, probably $800 to $1,000 a night. Well, the Park Hyatt in Tokyo costs 40,000 World of Hyatt points a night, plus or minus some, depending on peak pricing. But let's just call it 40,000 points. Whereas the Ritz-Carlton probably is 85,000 to 100,000. Same standard of hotel, same cash price. One costs twice to 2.5 times the amount of points. But if you only have Marriott points, you don't even have the option to book the Hyatt. But if you have the right transferable points, you can transfer them to Hyatt and then book that Hyatt. So that's where that value comes, is the ability to look at your options and say, same quality, same experience, this is the one I want to save more on my points. But if you only focus on airline and hotel points, you're going to miss out on those types of opportunities.
Yeah, I feel like another risk, not here in the notes, but I'm realizing to go through, of kind of earning points with a particular airline or hotel, is that you do have a huge exposure to devaluations. Like, you're sitting there on 500,000 Marriott points and you're like, yeah, life is good, I like this. And then you wake up to one of those fun emails that's like, new and exciting updates from our program, which means bad, awful news coming. And then you scroll through and it's like, oh yeah, by the way, the price per night for our hotel is tripling. And, you know, the value of your points just got completely cut badly and you have no other options. Yeah. So that's...
Which the Park Hyatt Tokyo literally got devalued the week we're recording this.
Yeah, but I was still just going to say, I had to go in there and update the points price.
Yeah. And you do, I guess, but looking at these first two options with like the bank transferable programs and the airline and hotel specific ones, I think a lot of the confusion between choosing between these two options comes from the fact that the point totals are kind of generally similar in terms of like just the number. So you get like, you know, this airline card has a 60,000 point bonus and this bank card has a 60,000 point bonus. But what's kind of not said there that many people miss is that 60,000 points that can be transferred or redeemed with, you know, 12 to 20 different airlines and hotels are way more valuable than 60,000 points that are tied to one particular brand, even though those numbers look similar. So that's a common trap that people fall for and one to keep an eye out when evaluating between these two options. Anything else on airline hotel points, or I guess bank points that we've covered as well? before we move on to our favorite, cashback.
That's where the real secrets are.
Yes.
If you're tuning in, you're about to get the real insider information.
Let's do it. Cashback and fixed value points. This is the third of the three. And to speak to these on a high level, this is the simple choice. You don't have to worry about redemption, confusion, many different ways to use the points. They're just nice and simple. There's a fixed value. You can just take the cash, usually as a statement credit or a deposit to your bank. Cash is king, as they say. Everyone loves cash. And we're going to kind of get into a lot of the downsides of these points. There's some kind of upsides and things to be aware of. But I think the most important thing to know as you go into this is that it is not of an equivalent value. One of the most common kind of objections that I see when I'm kind of explaining the points and miles hobby to folks is they'll say, yeah, but like, why would I choose to save on travel over cash when I could just use cash to like book equivalent travel? And it's funny because it's always said with this, like, you can see it in the eyes, like this, they think that it's like, I've never thought of that. Like, like I'd never thought of that. And what they're missing is that the value is very, very different. Cashback is great. Like, it's valuable because it's predictable, simple redemptions. It's, you know, you can use the cash to buy whatever you want, maybe a penguin suit when you go to Antarctica and want to go around with penguins. You know, kind of fits to your life. But what you miss out on is that the potential value that you earn from that has a pretty hard cap. You know, you're not going to, if you're the average person, earn enough cash back from your cards to book two nights at a five-star hotel that would have been $3,000. Whereas you do have that type of upside with both of the other types, transferable points from banks, as well as even points that are attached to particular airlines and hotels. So really, to boil it down, the choice isn't, do you want $500 cash or $500 of travel? It's closer to, do you want $500 of cash or somewhere between, I don't know, $2,000 and $5,000 of travel? And that's where it starts to click. It's like, oh, that's actually the decision that's in front of me, and not just the gotcha, you know? So there's a number of cards that are in cashback, and I guess the beauty of these is they're pretty easy to compare to each other. They don't often have the many different spending categories, like much more cashback here, much less cashback here. They tend to be pretty flat. You can look at them numbers to numbers and kind of know which one's better. These cards often do not have annual fees. Like, they are just very, very straightforward. And I guess a good intro to points and miles, but when you start to get into the more nuanced aspects of it, it is not apples to apples, my friends.
I think the way, at least at where I am in the points and miles game at this point, is the way I think about cashback is, if I'm at a point where I'm earning so many points that I can't spend them fast enough and there's a risk of them just sitting there and eventually getting devalued, at that point, I would consider cashback. If I just can't spend them fast enough, then yeah, I'd rather have cold hard cash, if it is even called that. I don't know if
it's you also could call digital cashback. Now. Yeah.
Right. So I kind of think about it that way. I don't, there are a lot of cards that are marketed as cashback, but you can also combine that cashback with a more premium card from the same bank and use them to transfer and unlock all of these like travel benefits. But outside of that, it's really not a part of my game at this point.
Yeah. Well, I guess fun fact about cashback cards we should mention is that, at least as of right now, who knows, a lot of changes happening out there, but any cashback that you get from cards is not taxable. So when you redeem $300 of cashback, you don't have to hope for a bill to come later in which you have to pay a portion of that in taxes. That is entirely yours as a rebate. So I guess that's an upside.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit too much of an example guy sometimes, but there's definitely time and places for cashback cards. I have a cashback card for a certain online retailer that I use for all of my purchases there. And I know there are probably some people who are definitely going to shout at me in the comments for that, of there's other ways I can get it. But I get a higher level of cash back with that card versus I might get 1 or 2 points on a flexible points card or even an airline or hotel co-branded card, that at the end of the day, like, the value I would get from the flexible or airline or hotel points are roughly about the same. Or, you know, a card I can talk about, the Bucky's credit card, right? If you are frequently shopping at Bucky's, you get like 5% back. You're going to be hard pressed to find a card like flexible points or airline or hotel that by default you can get more than, call it, 5 cents back for every dollar you spend. I'm not saying it's not possible. You see people frequently talking about getting more than 5 cents per point in value, but most people are getting like 2 to 3 when they're utilizing transfer partners. So comparing that versus 5%, 5% might win. Where I kind of generally see the problem though is most people that choose to prioritize cash back prioritize it because of the convenience of it. They think it's simpler, it's easier, I don't have to manage as many cards. And that's where the argument kind of starts to break down, because my card for my online retailer, I literally don't use it anywhere else. But most people who prefer cashback are using that one card for everything. So if you're using the Bucky's card at 5% as your justification, well, guess what? It earns 0% back anywhere else, I think, from what I could quickly find online.
But the beauty of Bucky's is you can buy anything there. So why would you ever buy from anywhere else? You know,
like, yeah, you could. It's almost like Bucky's is a little buffet of sorts.
Do they literally have a buffet? Because I would not be surprised at all.
I mean, they've got like the barbecue station.
Yeah. Oh, and the fudge station.
The bakery.
Yeah, all the
peanuts. Fudge station.
They have candles.
Candles, shirts.
Oh, done.
So I guess maybe like you would never need to shop anywhere else.
Yeah. Your metaphor is kind of falling apart here. We're dismantling it one by one.
Yeah. You're just trying to get out of eating at that Vegas buffet, huh?
Yeah. What kind of tool in the toolbox is cash back? It's like, this whole episode is metaphors falling apart.
Yeah. I mean, we'll stop destroying our own metaphors. Metaphors work when they work. I think the takeaway is like cash back has a place, whether it's for specific purchases from a particular retailer, or you've got enough flexible points or points with airlines and hotels that you're like, I want to earn something on this, but I don't really need to earn these other points. It's almost kind of like a scalpel.
Jesus.
I don't know. Yeah. Like it's a precision tool. It's a precision tool to kind of fill in the gaps. But it's not your everyday tool. It's not your regular go-to routine thing. You're never going to get the most optimized value long-term by prioritizing cash back over the others. And that's like the takeaway here, right? The takeaway here is not that flexible hotel and airline or like that one is right, one is wrong. It's about the general prioritization of knowing when to use one over the other, or when to earn which one over the other.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of our like Facebook group members and audience in general will use these cashback cards to kind of supplement travel expenses once you're already on the trip. So food or excursions, that type of stuff. So there's definitely Airbnbs. A place for it. Yeah, Airbnbs. There's definitely room for it in your strategy, but if you're only focused on cashback, you're going to miss out on a lot of other value.
Yeah, although one nuance to that is that in my experience, most cashback cards have foreign transaction fees because they don't have annual fees. So if you're, it works on trips, but not generally, if you're abroad, you're giving away all the cashback you're earning in that usually 3% fee. And
yeah.
I guess I was thinking of it more of like, oh, at the end of this calendar year, I've earned $1,000 in cash back. So like now I have $1,000 to spend on my upcoming trip.
Absolutely, yeah.
Instead of, but you're right. The foreign transaction fees pretty much entirely negate the cash back that you'd earn.
Really, in my experience, like the kind of few narrow niches that cash back cards make sense, like when I'm doing like a reader consult or something like that, is the most common one is business owners with just an absolutely incredible amount of organic spend. So when it's like, hey, I spent $200,000 a month for my business through cards, and like that's, you know, plenty to earn enough points of whatever you could possibly need. Maybe you put some of that on like a points and miles card, but you do eventually reach a point where the incremental value of more of these points is going down. You can't invest them and grow them over time. And then that's when you switch to a pretty simple cashback card and just take that cash for your business. Or I guess a related scenario is when you have businesses that have multiple owners, and then you have someone that, like, okay, we have a million of these bank points that we earned, but how do we divide that among the people who own this company? Yeah. You can't really transfer those easily or share them. So cashback makes it easier to kind of split that benefit. But otherwise, in my experience, like, if I had to guess, like 90 to 95% of people I talk to who are using cashback cards are doing it because they didn't understand that cashback generally is going to be lower value than travel, and it's not that equal, I would prefer cash over travel choice that they thought it was.
Yeah. And I think people who are strong advocates for cashback outside of these, like, exceptions, at the end of the day, like, it's almost like you're not getting it. That's what I feel yes. is kind of the hard thing. And that feels like really arrogant to say if you're not getting it. But, like, at the end of the day, where the most value comes in out of all of this is from the bonus points you get when you open a card. Cash back people are typically looking at their day-to-day routine spend and not thinking in terms of the bonus and how can I be earning these bonuses. And framing it in that perspective, right, we're not talking comparing 2x points versus 5% cash back. We're talking during a bonus period potentially 15-20 points for every dollar versus 5% cash back. And the bonuses themselves on cashback cards also tend to be lower because lower to no annual fees. It's just harder to justify the larger bonuses. And so take us, if you're someone who's, I don't know, listening to this and you're a strong advocate for cashback over anything else, and for some reason you're like, you're still listening, which I'm Thank you. yeah, thank you. But, like, take a step back and let's, like, think bigger picture of, like, what the point of all of this is. It's to get the most value we can in the terms of rebates, whether it's points or cash back, from our everyday spend. And if you're comparing the bonus categories on a travel rewards card to a cashback card, that's missing the picture entirely. And that's kind of why cashback gets pushed to the side so much, because it's like, yeah, I can get 5% back at Buc-ee's. That's not what I'm focusing on. I'm focusing on how I can earn these 60,000 points as fast as possible, like this concentrated value from the new card bonus.
Yeah, that reminds me of one of the nuances that we tend to see with the kind of cashback fans. They miss like limits on earning a particular, like, limited time offer of higher cashback, like the quarterly bonuses or annual limits, where it's like, yes, this card is wonderful. It earns 6% back on groceries, and that's better than points and miles travel. And they're absolutely right. But the cashback card will limit that to 10,000 of spend per year, or maybe it's only for a quarter, for 2,000 spend. And if you look at it just on, like, a single day transaction basis, they're right. But over a longer time period, that does not hold up. Yeah. So in terms of prioritizing, I'm curious, like, kind of what's your bottom line take on how do you think about the three? How do they fit together? And how do maybe you use them in your own points and miles strategy in a complementary way?
Yeah, I'll go first. Most of the time I'm working on earning transferable points. That's always going to be my main priority. but I would say for me, there's two types of airline points that I'm always trying to earn. That's Southwest and American Airlines. Southwest for me that's because for the foreseeable future, the companion pass will always be a part of my strategy. Denver's a major hub for Southwest Airlines, and pretty much any Southwest point I earn is worth 2x that because of the companion pass. So for me, if I can earn those points, that's great. And then American Airlines, that's always on my list just because they have no transfer partners currently. Hopefully that'll change one day, but right now we're limited from that perspective. So using a co-branded card to earn those points, there's a ton of value there. That's how I flew to Australia in first class for just 70,000 points. I think that's probably the cheapest way you could get to Australia in first class. So using, like, those co-branded cards to make those points and miles a priority for me is another way that I kind of work them into my strategy.
Is there any component of your strategy, Emily, that involves cashback? Like, do you have a cashback card in your wallet? Is it fit any need for you at all?
Yeah, I mean, I have cards that technically are marketed as cashback cards, but I don't ever redeem them as cashback. They're part of larger bank programs that mean I can transfer them to partners, travel partners, as long as I have one of the premium cards from that bank. So I do, but I don't ever use them as cashback.
How about you, Travis?
I'm very similar to Emily. I like a mix of co-branded and flexible points. I generally prioritize flexible points, but you know, I'm under 524 and just opened a card with a bank that I don't have to be under 524 for, and it's a co-branded card. So
I think Travis and I both just got the same card.
We did. We'll have to talk about it offline for reasons previously mentioned.
Ask us at a meetup. That's a decision that I made from having done this for a while and just kind of being okay with doing that. But I like to mix the two because there are certain, as I mentioned, there are certain airline and hotel programs that I don't like transferring my flexible points to. I don't think it's a good value, but I think that those programs are inherently good. United is one of them. Marriott is another one of them. I think that there's merit to both of those programs, but they're two that I use pretty heavily, but that I don't actually like transferring my flexible points to. American Airlines, as Emily mentioned, obviously does not offer, there's no flexible points that transfers there. So I have to, at least at the time of recording, hopefully the recording
curse means that. Yeah, we're hoping that's going to change.
That tomorrow that's going to change. But that's my only option. And I've gotten a ton of value out of their points over the years. I like having them. So I mix the two. When I don't have anything specific in mind for my point strategy, my default is flexible points. But it doesn't mean that I don't mix the two. In terms of cash back, I, like Emily, I have some cash backs that are marketed as cash back. But technically, like, since I have a premium card with those banks, they issue it as points. So... But as I mentioned, there's a major online retailer who I use their cashback card for all my purchases there. It's kind of one of those, I'm at a point in my points and miles journey where I'm not trying to get the highest value from every single purchase that I make. And getting 5% from this retailer is good enough for me. So I'm happy to do that. And it doesn't bother me one way or the other. So I do not have a Bucky's credit card though. So there's there's times and places where I use cash back, but again, it's never my default go-to card. It's for very specific scenarios only.
Yeah. And I'm very similar situation to what the two of you described. For me, cash back kind of exists in a layer that happens beyond transferable points to where I have enough of those for the foreseeable future, and now the incremental value has dropped to a point where cashback might make sense. I'm fortunate to have a fair amount of just business spend for 10x travel that generally earns me enough points and miles to cover all the travel for myself and my family for a period of time. But once I hit a certain threshold to where I'm earning points and miles that I'm probably not going to redeem for the next 2 years, I will switch many of our bills to a card that earns cashback, because I can take that for business expenses and kind of use it for more day-to-day things and not have to worry about devaluations and the risks that happen over the course of a couple of years. And of course, knowing that I can always up my travel or bank points as needed to top off there. So otherwise, as I mentioned earlier, the vast majority of people who I talk to who are earning cash back are just kind of missing that piece of the puzzle as to why that isn't necessarily an equivalent choice or a preference. But I mean, for some people, they might just not like to travel all that much, or they might be road trip people, or they might just have a different lifestyle to where jetting off to Tokyo on a first class flight and staying at the Park Hyatt is not something they're particularly interested in. At that point, yes, go get cash back. It's kind of the same we say with redemptions. The only bad redemption is a misinformed redemption. The only bad use or choice of cash back is a misinformed one. If you understand all these nuances and still pick that, great. Just make sure that you know what you're passing up to choose cashback, because many, many people do not, unfortunately. So that's how those three kind of layer together. I'm sure there's a small number of people who've listened to the end of this show who are just cashback enthusiasts who are just ready to show up at a meetup and tell us all about why their cashback card is so cool. And if that is you, be friendly, but also go check out 10xtravel.com/events, where we list the meetups that we're hosting for 2025. There's what, maybe 8 or 9 of them, I believe, last time I looked, all across the country, where we come to your town. We rent out generally like a bar or event space. We cover all the food and drink, and we pay for it with a card that earns transferable points. But do come out, say hello to us. Tell us why you think that we're wrong. Do so also in the YouTube comments. I think Spotify is adding comments now. So if that is up at the moment, feel free to do it in there, wherever you think is best. We're happy to engage you and talk about it. But that's kind of a high-level overview of the three different types of points and miles, and hopefully that has given everyone a better picture as to how that might apply to your particular situation. And if you're not sure, reach out and ask. We'd be happy to walk you through it. So to kind of wrap it up, there really is no one-size-fits-all answer. You'll find what works best for you, but we do recommend keeping it simple to start. Start by working through sign-up bonuses on cards, generally from banks that have transferable points programs. That way you can have many options open to you, even if they don't immediately make sense to you at the moment. Trust me, they will as you go. Learn by doing. Work on earning transferable points based on your spending categories that you're looking at. A little light analysis on how much money you spend a typical month on things that are often incentivized on certain cards will do you well. There is a place for co-brand hotel airline points and cards. But that is often beneath the layer of transferable points and requires you to understand the nuances there. And cashback does have its place. It's rare, but it's out there. And those who know are know. We have a ton of incredible resources to help you answer this question for yourself, as well as any others related to points and miles. Make sure to check out our website, 10xtravel.com, for more program guides, overviews of how to use points and miles to help this all make a little bit more sense. We even have a transfer partner cheat sheet there that'll show you how to get more out of these transferable points. Using them in ways that might fit with your life. Join our Facebook group, where over 380,000 people come together and talk about how much they don't like cashback and many other things, sharing their points and miles knowledge, answering your questions. One of the beautiful things about the Facebook group is it's been running for almost a decade now. So any sort of question or situation you have, even if you're not comfortable posting it in front of such a massive audience, just hop in there and search. It's been asked before, addressed many times. You can just benefit from learning from others. And last but not least, sign up for our free tool, My10X. That's where you'll find our course that explains all the basics here, as well as many tools and features to help you manage all of your cards, points and miles, loyalty programs in one single place. It's entirely free. You can find it at my.10xtravel.com or linked in the show notes. Final thoughts, Travis, Emily, anything I missed? Things to share? Analogies that hold up for a little bit until we wrap this thing?
Vegas buffets, Virgin Atlantic flights, all of that jazz.
Yes. Cashback cards are like taking a Swiss Army knife to a Vegas buffet. Like, it's already broken down. Let's not beat that dead horse. Well, anyway, from all of us at 10X Travel, we appreciate you listening. This has been Takeoff, a Points and Miles podcast by us at 10X Travel. I'm your host, Bryce. For Travis and Emily, we appreciate you listening today, and we will talk to you next time. Bye now.